Nick's brief to me when he sent the email was that Talk One was meant to be a rousing exposition. I don't think I've ever given a rousing exposition in my life. I don't think I've started this morning either. Then he said, in the second session, he said, would you give us reflections on 15 years of working with the Northwest Gospel Partnership? And so I'm very happy to give you some reflections on 15 years, and they're necessarily, therefore, anecdotal. So anything that's helpful, I'll be thrilled at, but anything that's just not relevant to you guys, then just ignore. Does that make sense? Now, here they are. They're in no particular... They are in some order, but... The first thing I've noticed is that our gospel partnership is just like a local church. Now, at one level, that shouldn't be a huge surprise to us. The Greek word koinonia, which is often translated fellowship or partnership or share in our English translations, is used of partnering beyond a local church. So you'll know that Paul, particularly in Philippians, uses the idea of partnership between the Philippian church and him. Paul, in some distance away, is grateful for the Philippian support. He rejoices at the work that God has done in them to bring about partnership between the Philippian church and he, Paul, and at the end of the letter is thanking them for the partnership that they have engaged in with him. But the word koinonia, partnership, isn't just used to describe fellowship between a church and other ministry beyond it. It is used in Philippians in that way, and which is why I am passionate about a gospel partnership. It seemed to me 15 years ago that one of the greatest joys of establishing a gospel partnership was seeing in a region like-minded brothers and sisters across churches starting to work together in ways that had not happened before, and particularly seeing the joy of unity in partnership between churches of different denominations and backgrounds. I think that has been an absolute joy. So the New Testament is big on partnership between local church and beyond local church. And you see examples of that just riddled through the end of Paul's letter to the church in Rome, for example. How Paul expects the church in Rome to be in partnership with him, Paul. How Paul expects the church in Rome to be in partnership with the church in Jerusalem. And how Paul expects the churches in Rome, it's clear from Romans 16 there's more than one fellowship within Rome, to be in partnership, with each other. So partnership is beyond just one church, it moves beyond just one church to others. And that's what this partnership is, and it's a great joy to be with you. But the word koinonia, of course, is used in the New Testament not just to describe partnership beyond a local church to others, but to describe the fellowship of a local church. So in a local church, we're in partnership together. And so, for example, in 1 John, John describes how the church itself, the members, are partners with one another. And so because partnership is something that's within a local church, and partnership is something from a local church to others in gospel ministry, other churches in other locations, it's been no surprise, though I think I really should have guessed it, no surprise to discover that all the problems that I, as a vicar, experienced in a local church, I've noticed happen in a partnership across churches as well. So, here are some of them. I've noticed that we have core and fringe partners. Do you notice that happens so often in the local church, doesn't it? You have the core. They're the people who are at the prayer meetings, who are regular giving, always serving. And then sometimes a fringe, they're Christians perhaps, but not really doing very much. And we have that in our gospel partnership in the Northwest. There are core partners who are always there, always at everything, always involved, always up for new ideas, always willing to meet the challenges that we're involved in and setting ourselves. And yet at the same time, there are others who are fringes, who, even though we ask them to send apologies for ministers' meetings, don't. Just like members of your church who don't send you apologies when they're not coming on Sunday. You'd like them to, wouldn't you? But that's just how it is. We've noticed that there are, therefore, consumers and givers. And however much we say partnership is actually about giving, I've noticed that there's consumerism too. One of the things we have done for the last 15 years is when any church is interested in becoming a partner church, when they express an interest in joining us, I always used to go and speak at either the church PCC or the church eldership or even the church membership, whatever the decision-making body of the local church, I asked to be invited to go and speak. And nearly always, the first question was, if we join, what will we get out of it? To which I always say, well, let's turn to Philippians and notice that partnership's always about what you give. And the irony, of course, in the Christian experience, isn't it, is that those who give actually are the receivers. Isn't it striking at the end of Philippians 4 that Paul is thanking the Philippians for giving to him, and yet he says he's looking for what will be credited to their account. That actually their giving in partnership is doing them good. I always used to struggle in the local church to encourage a congregation to think in those terms. Give yourself to the local church in partnership and you will be the receiver. But have you noticed that there are the consumers in your local church? Yeah, we used to have people in our local church, if we had an all-age service, didn't come. And they used to pick and choose what they'd come to and pick and choose what they liked, and if they didn't like what was going on, they wouldn't come. And I've noticed that in our gospel partnership too. If they like the speaker who's on a particular occasion, they turn up. But if they don't like him, then they don't come. And therefore, partnership is just like a local church. And therefore, secondly, I've noticed that disappointments are normal. All the disappointments that you have in a local church are the disappointments we've had in our gospel partnership. I'm now going to shock you. Well, maybe not shock you. We started our gospel partnership 15 years ago, 15 and a half years ago, with 9 ministers meeting together. 3 of those 9, their marriages have now broken up. 2 of the 3 marriages as a result of adultery. And all 3 of them no longer in gospel ministry. That's what you find in the local church, isn't it? I've been rather shocked that statistic 3 out of 9, and 5 out of our first 20, so 2 more in the next 11 ministers who joined us, have also left the ministry and whose marriages have broken up. So of the original 33%, and of the first 20, 25% of marriages broken up. We've now given ourselves a number of times to thinking about, as ministers, marriage, and had people in to do seminars and stuff for us. It's a great, great tragedy, but it is just what you see in the local church. Of those 5, 4 are not only no longer in Christian ministry, they're no longer attending church or professing Christians. I think that is one of the most gut-wrenching things that happens in a local church, isn't it? And we've all seen it, haven't we? It may not be the marriage issue, but we've known people who were professing faith, who seemed to be going for it, and then maybe through marriage breakup or something else, they stop and they give up. In 3 of those 4 cases, It was gradual. Their ministries had stopped. They started going to a different church. Attendance dropped off. And for the ones who were having affairs, well, it's very hard to have an affair and keep having an affair and say you're Christian. It has been the most gut-wrenching experience of my 15 years in a gospel partnership. And I didn't expect it. And it was naive of me not to expect it, because that's just what happens in the local church. I should have expected it. We've had other disappointments. We've had the disappointment of church plants failing. I'll say a little bit more about church plants in a moment, but some of our church plants have failed. And that is desperately disappointing. Though, I am secretly glad that some of them have failed. Don't tell anyone else this. But by having a church plant or two fail, it has given people permission, in inverted commas, to have a go. Because if it fails, they won't be the first. You see, when you plant churches, you think that they must all succeed. But you and I, and again, know from the local church, not everything we have a go at succeeds. You might start a ministry in your local church. You might start a toddler group and it doesn't work. It doesn't take off. You might start a youth club and it never takes off. Or it starts for a bit and then disappears. That is just what ministry is like in local churches. So don't be surprised if it's what happens in the initiatives of a gospel partnership. Another disappointment has been that other networks and churches won't join. It's been a great sadness to me that there are people who describe themselves as evangelicals rather than Anglican evangelicals. So evangelical Anglicans, they call themselves. And we've got one or two. They're definitely keen Christian people. Don't hear me judging them. But who are so concerned for the denomination that they actually think that what we're doing in our gospel partnership is in some way disloyal from the Anglicans towards the denomination. Let me tell you a story. I won't tell you his name. The vicar of one of our larger Anglican churches in the region, a good man. And he, despite me meeting up and having lunch with him on three or four occasions, said, "I am not going to join your gospel partnership." I said, "Why? What's the real issue?" And he said, "Because I am very, very angry with you." I said, "Let's see if we can work this out. What are you angry?" And he said, "Not with you personally, much." But he said, "Is it true that some Anglican churches in your gospel partnership have given money to support a new church plant that is an FIEC church?" I said, "Sure, yeah, we've done that." He said, "That is grossly disloyal to the Church of England. You're giving money that's Anglican money, and you're giving it for a free church plant." I said, "Do you know, I don't think the question on the last day, as we've gone about temple building together, I don't think the question on the last day will be, what denomination did you plant? I think it will be, did you have a heart for the lost in a particular area and just find ways to get the gospel to be known in that area? I think that's the question that will be asked on the last day, not whether you were loyally Anglican and you used Anglican money for Anglican projects." And then I asked him the question that actually gave away the real problem. I said, I'll call him Bill, that's not his name. Bill, I said, "You've got a daughter who's grown up. Imagine she went to a town where there was an Anglican church and an FIEC church." I said, "Imagine the Anglican church had a lesbian liberal vicar. And the FIEC church had a pastor who taught the Bible faithfully and encouraged people in service. I said, which of those two churches would you encourage your daughter to go to? He said, the Church of England Church every time. I said, that's what our problem is. And he has never joined. He's still in the region. He's never come to anything. It's heartbreaking. We've not been able to gather together with everyone that I hoped we would be able to gather together with. But I guess that's just the experience you will have had too. There'll be churches around here that you'd have loved to partner with, but it's just for one reason or another not been possible. That having been said, let me say that partnership together, this is thirdly, the partnership together for me has brought wonderful blessing. I'm not old enough to know or remember the Stock Lloyd Jones divide of the late 60s. But as I said right at the outset, one of the joys for us as a partnership has been seeing the coming together of what was separate for decades, really. And us seeing that actually, and I mean this theologically as well as practically, when Stott and Lloyd-Jones divided and Stott encouraged Anglicans to work within the system, which actually hasn't succeeded, what that meant we ended up doing was pretending that Anglicans were in fellowship with other Anglicans who actually they were not in theological fellowship with. It was a pretense. Because 1 John is crystal clear that you come into fellowship with each other as you're in fellowship with the Father, and you come into fellowship with the Father through fellowship with the apostles and their teaching. That's the same as Jesus' prayer in John 17, unity amongst those who believe in the truth. And so we were constantly, as I was growing up as a young Anglican, ordained back 35 years ago, we were pretending we were having fellowship with people we were not in fellowship with. And then suddenly we've seen, I think through things like the Proclamation Trust and through gospel partnerships, we've seen, actually, I am in real fellowship as an Anglican evangelical. I'm in real fellowship with my FIC brothers down the road and my Baptist church brothers who are evangelical down the road. I'm in fellowship with people who believe the apostles' teaching. And discovering that fellowship has been one of the most wonderful blessings of the last 15 years. It has been an enormous blessing, therefore, as a result of that fellowship, of practically being able to help one another. And we've seen practical helping of one another in all kinds of imaginative and creative ways. I've given up counting the number of times that we've seen ministers going to another church's prayer meeting to talk about the prayer needs of their church. I've known of situations where two churches have joined together for a prayer meeting together to share and pray for one another's needs and vision and plans. I think it's been wonderfully encouraging for us to work together for youth ministry. So 3 times a year we have a youth event. We have an evangelistic one in the summer. We have a whole day teaching day for teenagers in November. And we have a just sheer fun one at Easter. At the teaching one in November, which I've often had the privilege of speaking at, we'll get maybe 200 14 to 18-year-olds. That's across 90 churches. And my own kids have loved the fact that they've been able to be in something bigger and see that although they are the only Christians in their school that we can find, and the youth group they go, two of them have left, but the one Harry goes to is a youth group of only 6 children, not big, but to be part of something bigger. And we can do that, we've been able to do that together. That's been so encouraging. And we've done all kinds of training stuff for Sunday school leaders as well, which we'd never do as individual churches, but has been so encouraging. We've established preaching groups in little networks around the place. It's been wonderfully stimulating and encouraging to keep us preaching better and better, and to challenge and encourage one another in our preaching ministry. And I think the most encouraging thing is that it's not lonely. When I moved to the Northwest, when we gathered our first group of ministers, we only knew of nine. But last week at our ministers' meeting, there were over 120. There's no need to be lonely. You don't need to be lonely in Sussex. You've got friends, people to stimulate you. I think that's very encouraging indeed. I think fourthly, I think the thing that has been wonderfully encouraging for us has been church planting. It's been very, very exciting. As I said, not all of them have succeeded, and there's 5 minutes for questions at the end. You can ask why some of them haven't succeeded if you have wanted to. We knew we had to do it when we started our partnership, because no one else was doing it. And we knew we had to take responsibility for it. Back in those days, the Acts 29 movement hadn't really wasn't existing doing their church planting, and the HDB church planting initiatives were really based in the South and South alone. So the Northwest was barren in terms of church planting. We got out a big map, and we looked at where we knew of evangelical churches, and we tried to be as generous in our understanding of evangelical as we could be. And we got out the map and we looked and saw town after town after town with virtually nothing. And then we saw big cities with very little. And so we knew that we had to start church planting. It was not something any of us of ourselves wanted to do. None of us thought we were church planters. And as somebody pointed out, it is never the right time to church plant, because planting churches involves people and money. You can't plant a church without people, and you can't plant a church without some money. And you know, it's never the right time for a local church to give away people. And it's never the right time for a local church to give away money or more money. It's never the right time. After all, the people you would want in a new church plant are probably the people you want to keep in your local church, because they're already doing such valuable ministry. They're already leading this, that, and the other. And if you give them away, they're likely to be people who give well. And you'll lose the money they give. It's never the right time. We knew that right from the outset, but we decided we just had to do it, because as we looked at the map, we just saw there were big, big gaps. Peter Jensen who alerted us. He's now retired Archbishop of Sydney, but it was Peter Jensen who alerted that to us in his his UK tour that started our partnership back in 2003, And he made two comments that have been so helpful for us. I keep restating them time and time again. They're not biblical. He first said, "You do know the cavalry aren't coming, don't you?" You know those John Wayne westerns where at the end the beleaguered village, the cavalry come over the hill and rescue them, and they all live happily ever after. He said, "There is no cavalry coming to win the Northwest for the Lord Jesus. There aren't 30,000 South Koreans coming to be missionaries in the northwest of England, and even if they came, Liverpudlians would not understand their accent. The cavalry aren't coming." And secondly, and I think the thing that really did stimulate us more than anything else, he said, in England, you have a good history of thinking locally. The Church of England parish system has done that in part. You've got a geographical patch. And even free churches know that they've got an area that they've got to think about primarily. He said, in England, you think locally. Hooray. He said, in England, you've got a great history of thinking globally. Lots of missionaries sent out from England. So Bishop Hannington Memorial Church here Well, I've preached in Bishop Hannington Theological College in Mombasa. Bishop Hannington went to East Africa and preached the gospel. There's a very moving graveyard just outside Mombasa where the graves of many English men who went in their 20s as missionaries in the mid to late 19th century, and most of them died before they were 30 of malaria. But ask Kenyans today, are you glad they came? And they are. We've got a history of thinking globally. And every church I've been to knows it's got a missionary focus somewhere. There'll be a missionary board somewhere. But then Peter Jensen said this to us. He said, but you do not have a good track record of thinking regionally. He said, who's going to take responsibility for town A down the road where there is no good Bible teaching church? Who's taking responsibility for that? In the Church of England, our dioceses were not. And no one else was at that time. Others have started to think about that more recently. And so we set about thinking, what types of church plants could we engage in? We thought about the what often is called the mother planting a daughter church. Now, one of the church plants that we saw start early on is called Christ Church Liverpool, a city centre church that was planted 13 years ago. But that church, in the last years, has planted 5 other churches. Now, they've planted from within themselves. So they've a group from that church have gone with a leader and planted in another location, somewhere in the kind of Liverpool area. The church I went to for many years in Leyland planted 3 churches in 10 years, planted daughter churches, 2 of them within the local parish and 1 in a next door parish with the incumbent's permission and the bishop's permission. And it's all now got all Anglican. If you're Anglican, you'll know how all these things happen, BMOs and things like that. It has been harder for us to do church plants that have been from Anglican churches into other areas, because of the dislike of bishops particularly saying that you can't plant in someone else's area. We've had a number of incidents where there's been difficulty in that regard. So 4 years ago, we approached the Bishop of Blackburn and said to him, All Saints Preston have got 25 people driving from Lytham to church in Preston. Now, that's geographically about 14 miles. There's no good evangelical church in Lytham. Can All Saints plant in Lytham? All Saints said to the bishop, there will be no cost to you, we will fund the minister. They talked with the bishop for months and months, and in the end he said no. And it's still not yet happened. A church just near Winsford wanted to plant in Crewe. Virtually nothing going on in terms of evangelical church in Crewe. In fact, nothing. Crewe's a growing town. It's now got a Manchester University campus on it. So lots of students are now studying in Crewe. A church had got a group of people who were willing, this is a big thing, were willing to move house to Crewe. A young minister who's done a curacy in the Northwest was willing to lead it. And we spent a year talking with the local bishop on how to make it possible. We went and spoke to the clergy in Crewe, who were all liberals, and said, would you be opposed to a planting of a church in Crewe? No, we wouldn't. Come. They're so liberal, they don't think an evangelical's a threat to them. Come. And in the end, the bishop said, no, I can't see a way to make it happen. So what do? 3 Sundays ago, they started. And started meeting in a school, and it's not going to be a Church of England church. What a foolish thing from the bishop. Especially on the diocesan website, when one of their visions is to plant churches. A second type of not just mother-daughter plant is what we call collaborative plants. That is where it's not just one church planting a group of people, but where it's a number of churches working together to see a church planted. City Church in Manchester is such a church plant. A group of people started to think that the city centre of Manchester and then North Manchester was going to be in desperate need of gospel witness. Nothing in the city centre in Manchester. So we started to pray about it as a partnership. At partnership meetings, we started to pray for Manchester. For about 18 months, we started to pray, how could we get a city centre church in Manchester started? Well, one church in Liverpool said, we'll encourage 10 people to go. Another church said, we'll encourage some people to go. Another church said, we'll encourage some people to go. Often best people. Well, they started almost exactly 2 years ago last month. They started with 16. They grew pretty quickly to 30. And last Sunday they had 220. And it has not affected the size of any of the other churches that are evangelical around Manchester. A lot of it conversion, a lot of it with people with real problems. For 15 years, we've been praying about Burnley. Now, the only thing you'll know about Burnley is it's got a Premier League side with the longest-serving manager now in the Premier League. But Burnley's a town of about 65,000 people. They're quite large, and nobody knows of any evangelical church in Burnley. Well, at long last, after 15 years of thinking about Burnley, at long last, we've got a group of about 9 people who are praying for Burnley and will be up for moving into Burnley when a church gets going there. And we're in the early stages of trying to work out how that is going to happen. Then we've got what we call revitalization plants. We've got a number of those. Some of you will know perhaps of Moorlands Church in Lancaster. That's a church that had got down to about 9 members, and only one was a wage earner, and only one was under 65. It was going to die. My assistant said, I'm up for doing a church plant in Lancaster. We talked endlessly with the 9 people who were there. We kept talking and talking, and they were up for a church plant, a church revitalization. They were up for a group of about 12 people moving to Lancaster, finding jobs, moving to Lancaster, and going to that church. We didn't do everything particularly well. I don't think we alerted those 9 that 12 people coming with 4 children or 2 was going to change the whole dynamic of their church family. To their great credit, though, they still wanted it to happen, and 6 out of the 9 have stayed. Well, Moorlands is now 10 years old. They couldn't meet in the chapel that they had, so they started meeting in a local secondary school. And this summer they have just bought a wonderful building for £1.8 million. they get over 250 on a Sunday morning, and they themselves have planted a church in Morecambe, a kind of a daughtery church type. Christchurch Liverpool, they sent a pastor and about 15 people to Beechwood Chapel, a Brethren church on the Wirral, in a really rough part of the Wirral. And Christchurch Liverpool have also sent a pastor and a team from Liverpool to Formby Baptist to help revitalise that church. Wonderful. Anglicanly, we've encouraged particularly curates who are coming to the end of their curacy to think about taking on a non-evangelical church and seeking to turn it round. We have had some what I would call failures in that regard. We've had occasions where an evangelical has gone to the non-evangelical church and he's really lost, they've lost their way. There are two I can think of, two who really lost their way. And we've not helped them perhaps as much as we should have done as a partnership. And they've not kept coming to partnership things, so I think it's a swings and roundabouts. But let me tell you some wonderful ones. George Crowder was a curate in St John's, Hertford, and he went to take over the Anglican church in Pever. You won't have heard of most of these places because they're in the north, but went to take on an Anglican church in Pever. And he took with him, when he went to be the incumbent, took with him about 12 people from where he was a curate. There was a team of them. We've now discovered that in revitalisation, it's best if you can send a group of people to the church you're hoping to revitalise. It keeps the minister on his toes, because the people who go with him are saying, what's the plan? How are we going to do it? What's the strategy? But now that church, which was Anglo-Catholic and small and wasn't able to pay its parish share, has grown, and they're now able to do that. James Nash was curate at All Saints Preston and went to be the incumbent of St Andrew's Ashton, and James has seen the church grow there wonderfully, and it's turned around, 5 years turnaround. And Will Ruby is our newest one. About 6 weeks ago, he took 30 people from Holy Trinity Platt, and he's become the minister of a non-evangelical church in South Manchester, and they're planning to see that church under God turned round. It has been hard, but it can happen. So there are some of the types of church plants we've done, and here are some of the tips that we've learnt. So the first is, in our partnership, we've worked really hard to create a culture where church planting has been got by the partnership. We keep reminding ourselves that all churches are ultimately plants. Every church is a church plant originally. And therefore, we who have benefited from church planting ought to take that responsibility. We keep educating each other about the areas of need. We keep talking about the towns and villages where we've not done much. We keep talking about the large Islamic communities that we need to do much, much better with. We keep encouraging congregations to be being taught about partnership and giving, so that they get the idea that that when a new church plant is being talked about, they know about partnership and they know about giving. We've worked really hard, especially on our ministry training course, where we do 10 sessions on our ministry training course on church planting. We want to get into the minds of our young people that planting is normal and they ought to think about planting and be prepared to be up for planting. Because young people can be part of a church plant generally easier than older people, unless they're the retireds. Because people are locked into schools and houses and jobs that can't change. But if you can put it in the minds of young people, well, they can more easily move church, move area, move job. And we particularly put it in the minds of people whose jobs are transferable. Doctors. Everywhere needs doctors. Teachers. Everywhere needs teachers. Nurses. Everywhere needs nurses. Get that group of people together in your church and say, I want to sell you the vision of church planting, because as a partnership we're going to plant another church. We've planted three churches this September. We've got more planned for next year. We want to keep planting churches. We want you to be thinking that you could be part of another church plant. And we try and gather the people who could easily do that. Doctors can move, teachers can move, nurses can move. That kind of person. We keep trying to identify churches that could do a daughter church. What churches are there in the area, in our partnership, that could do a church plant, do a daughter church plant? We want to keep being aware of opportunities for revitalization. In each of the five dioceses, we do this Anglicanly. In each of the five dioceses in the Northwest, we have appointed one person to be in the know about where all the vacancies are. So that we can think about then, who could we encourage to move? So there was a vacancy in a church in Barrow that came up, and we just said, there's a vacancy in Barrow. And we announced it at a partnership meeting. There's a vacancy in Barrow. Anyone feel up for that? And a guy called Tony Ford came up to me and he said, I think I'd be up for that. I've been where I am for X years. I've been thinking it's time for a move. I think I'd be up for that. And he was inducted three weeks ago. He's got a bit of turning around to do, but he's a big ex-rugby league player, so he'll pull that one off. We've asked the question, where are there struggling independent churches that we can make overtures towards? In terms of, would you be up for a group of people coming? You have to explain the difficulties and what that will mean. I keep talking around saying, are you thinking of a move any time? Here's the list of vacancies. Why not apply for one or two of them? And just see what happens. See if the Lord opens the door. We've tried to make sure that now when church revitalizations happen, we try and put the person having a go at it in touch with a mentor stroke coach, someone who's done one of them, and make sure that they get to know each other and can talk with each other and pray with each other. But the last thing I want to say after 15 years in a gospel partnership is we haven't even scratched the surface. In the 15 years that we've been going, it's estimated that the population of the Northwest has gone up from 7 million to 7.4 million. We've seen 30 churches or so planted. Well, 33, I think, but three of them failed. We've seen 30 churches planted that are still going, which is encouraging. I've done the numbers. If we add a number of revitalizations to the actual new churches, it might be up to about 36. The average attendance across them all is about 120. That means another, nearly 4,000 people. And the population has gone up by 400,000 people. We're not even planting churches at a rate that matches the growth in population of our region. So there is still so much more to do. And it's a constant thing, because although I think I've talked about church planting in our meetings and in our area, and I've gone to all kinds of groups and churches and talked about it, although I think I've told everybody there is about church planting, the surprising thing is there's always new people to tell and do it all over again. And I liken it to when Joe and I, which we did for many, many years, led the youth group in our local church. We did it for donkey's years. And what I realized was that every year we had to do the session on sex. Every year you have to teach the teenagers about sex. And I've realized now that every year we have to do all the church planting talking all over again. There's new people, and it's easy to go off the boil and stop doing it. There's just some reflections, Nick.
A few minutes for Q&A. Nigel, are you able to do the honours running around with the stick mic? So just while Nigel's getting this, just think of any questions you'd like to ask Justin, just to follow up.
You can ask about cricket if you want.
Over lunch.
Thank you very much. I'm Robert Lovett from Eastbourne. I'd be interested to hear your comments about how does one strengthen the sense of ownership for something like the Sussex Gospel Partnership amongst your congregation. You might be committed as a leader, but sometimes, for example, at an annual general meeting, when you talk about it to your congregation, they sort of have their arms closed and think, well, that's a nice thing that you go and do. It doesn't really sort of connect with me.
Thank you. That's very helpful. There are a number of things that you can do. First, you can make sure that your congregation is hearing regularly about church planting and that that is what's normal in the region now. And we've done that by encouraging it to be prayed about at church prayer meetings. At the last church prayer meeting I was at, we were praying as a church about an area of Preston where we are weak, and it's on the agenda, and we pray about it at the prayer meeting. I think that's a brilliant way of getting the church informed. We encourage congregations to come to our annual conference. You've got one in
November.
And we'll talk about it at that. And we'll always interview people who have either just done church plants or are just about to be doing church plants, so that our congregations just get to know that this is the normal part of what we are doing as a partnership. And that we might well come to them at some point and ask them to give money specifically for a new church plant, or we might encourage them to say, "How about you going?" So prayer meetings, our annual conference, and swapping prayer meetings. It's a great encouragement when at a church prayer meeting you get five people from a new church plant come and share their story. Very encouraging. And so those are some of the kind of ways we've tried to do it. And if you only mention it once a year at the AGM, half your congregation aren't at the AGM, another half of them are asleep at the AGM. That's my Anglican experience. And so they don't really get it. You just have to, it really is like some of the things you teach the youth group. You have to keep saying it and keep saying it. And be honest about the difficulties as well as the joys. We have had three disasters.
Thank you, Justin. Another question?
Hi, thanks for your talk. I'm just slightly struggling with the analogy of a gospel partnership and a church. It seems to be quite similar to what an Anglo-Catholic would say about a diocese. How do we differentiate? What are the differences between a gospel partnership and a church?
Yes,
I certainly couldn't commit to a partnership in the way that I would expect people to commit to a church, for example.
I was not saying that the gospel partnership is church. I was just wanting to draw attention to the fact that I've noticed that there are similarities between the difficulties that I've experienced in the partnership are the same kind of difficulties I experience in the local church. And I think that's just because we're Christians together in a partnership, and we're Christians together in the local church. And so the kind of difficulties you experience in the local church are the kind of things that then you experience when you get a wider group of Christians together. So I'm certainly not Anglo-Catholic, and certainly not suggesting that the diocese is the church, which often you hear being said. I'm just saying because we're all Christians, when we see Christians in the local church have difficulties, don't expect them not to manifest amongst us as a group of Christians. Thank you.
Okay. One more question, I think.
Slightly negatively. Can you just tell us what are identifiable characteristics about the three failures that we can learn from in terms of what went wrong?
Okay. I think the things that went wrong were in two of them, we tried to do church plants on Sunday afternoons in a new location, and we didn't spell out clearly enough to those who went to the church plant that they really did need to make that church plant church. And so we discovered that they were still going to the church they were at in the morning and then going to the church plants in the afternoon. And they never really... One of the hard things about a church plant is you do have to have a certain measure of loosening of the bonds of fellowship that you had with the church you were in before. And that's just inevitable if you're going to have the energy and the time to invest in new relationships, both within the plant itself and in the community that you're wanting to plant into. We would not do that now again. We had two of our three. Those were monumental mistakes. And I think in the third, we never quite got enough people to be a good enough core. Now, it's not an exact science, because one of the church plants we did in Manchester 12 years ago, we started with three couples. So it must be possible to start a church with three couples, mustn't it? Mm. Yeah, it's possible for Paul to go to a place and see in Philippi, and you get Lydia, the slave girl, and the Roman jailer, and I take it they're quite a small group. There are others there, but it's pretty small, I guess, to start with. So it must be possible to start really small, and a lot of missionary work has historically been done that way. But we have the third one, I think it was just too fragile and was too weak that they didn't want to invite anyone else to come to it. Sometimes 10 people and